Good morning. My name is Susan, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the CAP Action Supreme Court Decision Response conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Lori Lotus, you may begin your conference.
Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. This is Lori Lotus from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Thank you for joining us for this incredible call that we're about to have, responding to the Supreme Court's ruling on the Affordable Care Act. Today, you will hear from CAP President Neera Tanden and former Acting Solicitor General Walter Dellinger. And then you will have an opportunity to ask some questions. Just as a reminder, this call is being recorded, and by being on the call, you consent to being recorded. If you have additional questions after the call, please contact Katie Peters at kpeters@americanprogressaction.org. And now I will turn the call over to Walter Dellinger. Walter.
It will take some time to digest what the various courts' opinions mean for constitutional law, but it means an enormous amount to those who will have better access to a more effective and more efficient healthcare system. There were four justices that would have struck down the bill in its entirety, and that would have meant that people could once again be denied coverage because they had a pre-existing condition like asthma, or their rates could be increased to unaffordable levels if they had a child born with a birth defect. There are now 50 million people that are going to have access to better preventive care. Young people can stay on their family's insurance policy. Seniors won't have to worry about the donut hole. This is just an enormous achievement that the law has upheld in its entirety. On Medicaid, the requirement that states expand Medicaid to cover millions of people who do not have affordable access now, that provision is upheld. The remedy for any state that doesn't agree to the critically important expansions of Medicaid is if they can lose the funding that is provided to the states under the Affordable Care Act. It would be insane for any state to turn down that funding for its citizens. And so I think that is a vindication of the Medicaid expansion. I just want to make one point. Justice Scalia said at oral arguments that the president said this was not a tax. What the president said, and what was clearly correct, was he told George Stephanopoulos in that famous interview that it's not a tax increase. And what he actually said was, for us to say that you've got to take responsibility to get health insurance is absolutely not a tax increase. And the president was correct about that. This is a penalty that can be upheld under the taxing power. And it has always been the case that this so-called mandate never actually forced anyone to purchase insurance. It simply applied a relatively modest financial incentive by an addition of not more than 2.5% to their tax bill. So finally, I think it's certainly an enormous vindication for the Solicitor General, who argued forcefully to the Supreme Court that the law could be sustained under the taxing power.
So, and this is Neera Tanden. I'm the president of the Center for American Progress and counselor for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And I worked on the legislation for the president, CAP has been trying to help with the amicus briefs. And let me just say a few things. First, I want to acknowledge that Walter made an argument a few days ago that the Supreme Court would uphold and that Roberts would uphold on the taxing power. So I would like to just affirm his prescience on this and thank him for all the work he's done over the last 2 years to make the case publicly and privately about the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act, which is affirmed today. And let me just I know a lot of people want to focus on the politics and the fact that the House Republicans are moving to repeal the bill, et cetera. But I think I want to affirm what Walter said, which is today's decision is an affirmation of the court's role to neutrally decide what is constitutional. And in doing so, they have affirmed that the Affordable Care Act is constitutional, but also that they are allowing the incredibly important benefits that are already transforming people's lives to go forward. 3 million young adults have health insurance who didn't have it before. 5 million Medicare beneficiaries have saved over $3 billion. But really, most importantly, and this is what the individual mandate was about, we will have properly functioning exchanges in the states, and 32 million Americans who don't have health insurance today will have it, which really means that the promise in our country that you can no longer, you will not go bankrupt because of medical expenses, that promise will be kept. And so I really want to turn this over to questions. I know people have a lot of questions. I know a lot of people will focus on the politics today, but what's really important is that this law that is transforming the system and changing lives for the better will go forward. And for that, we're grateful.
Thank you. Go ahead, operator.
To ask an audio question at this time, you may press star and the number one on your telephone keypad. That's star and the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Margot Sanger-Getz with National Journal.
Hi, thanks for doing this. I was curious if you guys could talk to me a little bit about the implications of the Medicaid ruling. I'm wondering in particular whether states that might choose to opt out, which it appears they're now allowed to do, what will happen to the population that was going to get those Medicaid benefits? Will they be eligible for tax credits on exchanges, or is that a whole?
Let me try to address that. I think, you know, again, we have to parse out this ruling a little bit more. As I understand it, the ruling is basically saying that the Medicaid expansion can go forward. It's just that the federal government can't use the existing Medicaid powers, existing Medicaid funding, the traditional Medicaid funding, to require it. So I think, you know, we'll learn more about the specific meaning of this, but this is an affirmation of the Medicaid expansion. It's a limitation on the nature of the expansion, but they are not finding the Medicaid expansion unconstitutional.
No, in fact, let me, this is Walter, the Medicaid expansion is upheld. The requirements that the state expand Medicaid is upheld. What is limited is the remedy. And the remedy that the Department of the Secretary of Health and Human Services can impose on a state that does not go along with expanding Medicaid to its citizens, the remedy that the secretary can impose will be limited to withholding from the state the expanded federal funding that comes to the states under the Affordable Care Act. So,
okay, but don't you think the practical implications of that will be that some states will choose not to do the expansion because there will be no practical penalty for them?
No, I mean, what I would say, just so we all understand, the subsidy rate for the Medicaid expansion is 90%, 95%, 97%. So the idea that states would choose not to use the Medicaid subsidies, I think when they've been using Medicaid subsidies for a long time at a much lower rate, obviously states have a 50% match rate currently and use Medicaid subsidies. I think that is very far-fetched. I mean, that would be...
Well, 26 states challenged that provision, right? That's why the court decided it.
Absolutely, and I think that we'll see as you go forward that that they will affirm this part of it. I mean, I would be shocked that a governor would say, because you know, of a 3% cost share, they're going to deny coverage to million, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of their citizens.
Your next question comes from the line of Roshana Dixit with Inside Health Policy.
Hi, thanks so much for doing this call. I was just wondering if either of you could comment on, you know, a little bit about how the individual mandate was upheld under Congress's taxing authority, and whether, you know, that was viewed as a strong, like, defense of the mandate that would basically take hold, you know, by the justices.
You should take that, Walter.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand the question.
I was just wondering if you could comment, so, you know, on the court's decision to uphold the individual mandate under Congress's taxing power, as opposed to under the Commerce Clause.
Well, what the court did was to address the way in which the statute actually operates. There is essentially an exhortation that everyone have who can afford it have insurance coverage, but the penalty has always been only applied to those taxpayers who can afford coverage and choose not to have it, and they have to pay an additional 2.5%. So that if the court had any hesitation, and there were five justices that believed that requiring people to have requiring people to engage in this kind of commerce would be beyond the commerce power. But as Chief Justice Roberts noted, the effective provision is one that imposes an additional, relatively modest additional tax on those who go without it, and he upheld that. So it's a way of upholding the act in its entirety. It is a position that, it's interesting, the press was so interested in the broccoli question that they paid scant attention to the tax arguments, but the government not only fully briefed the taxing arguments, but Solicitor General Verrilli turned to the tax power and made it the concluding argument he made to the court. He spent the final 8 transcript pages of his oral argument arguing that it could be upheld precisely on this ground, so that this is the court accepted the Solicitor General's argument that he put forcefully to the court.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Anna Yakunova with Reuters.
Hello. Thanks for taking my question. I was just wondering if you could talk a bit about the political implications. As you said, that's kind of the focus at the moment. So I'm sure, you know, the other healthcare issues will come to play. What do you think that means for the overall kind of the way this is going to play in Congress, the fact that it was upheld under the taxing law, which maybe is much less popular and I think, you know, de-emphasized in the arguments rather than any of the other provision?
Well, I think that both Congress and the President will suggest that this is not a tax increase on anybody, it is not a tax increase on any American that does the responsible thing and makes sure they have adequate health insurance so other people don't have to pay their medical bills. And I think that's a perfectly defensible position. There shouldn't be anybody who pays one penny of additional tax if they do the responsible thing and maintain adequate health insurance coverage.
And let me just add to that. First of all, it's really critical that people remember that the individual mandate does not apply to the 85% of Americans who have coverage today. So the individual mandate itself only applies to those people who don't have coverage, which is 15%. And for those people, some of them, a small portion, will receive a penalty if they don't do, as Walter said, the responsible thing and have health insurance. And I would just remind those Republicans who are talking about this that the person who implemented this form of tax or penalty, the only person in the country, is Mitt Romney. Massachusetts, there are people in Massachusetts who are living under this system, and that those people live in that system because of Mitt Romney. So I think it is incumbent upon people to recognize that if they would like to talk about this as a tax increase, Mitt Romney is a tax increaser. So I think that is a forceful point for Democrats to make.
Thank you.
Again, to ask an audio question, please press star and the number one on your telephone keypad. That's star one on your telephone keypad. We'll again pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your next question comes from the line of Janice Lloyd with USA Today.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question, and this can go to either one of you. One of the things that we're going to try to do is outline for readers what they should start to expect to see happening next at the state level in hospitals, whether it's setting up the exchanges. Can you talk a little bit about that? What has to happen next? What are the big priorities now?
Let me take that. I think that we've heard a lot of rumblings from states, state activists, governor's offices, that once this issue was decided by the Supreme Court, that they would, even states that have been recalcitrant to set up their exchanges, would start that process. So I think, we'll see in the next few weeks whether that is taking place. Again, if states don't set up exchanges, it will fall on the federal government to set up the exchanges for their state. So there is an incentive for governors who've even been critical of the law to step up to the plate and actually have set up their own exchanges. I think for the most part, until really the oral arguments, I think most players in the healthcare system were operating as if it was was going to be upheld because most people believed that that would happen. And you've seen transformations in the healthcare system that are already moving to lower costs. And I think the Affordable Care Act has been an important linchpin to that effort. And so that will continue. And I think HHS will continue and speed up. And I think HHS will continue to implement their regulatory process. I mean, what we're looking forward to is that there's been a two-year political war to use the courts to stifle, stifle the Affordable Care Act for opponents of the law to use the courts to achieve their political aims. That has ended today, and I think stakeholders in the system would like to actually now roll up their sleeves and keep the progress moving.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. That's all of the questions we can take. If you have any questions, please contact Katie Peters, kpeters, at AmericanProgressAction.org, and we will set you up with additional comments. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
This does conclude today's conference. You may now disconnect.